The following podcast is a presentation of Small Biz America.
This is the Jackie Jones Challenge. Now here's your host, Jackie Jones.
Good afternoon. This is Jackie Jones with the Jackie Jones Challenge. And today my guest is Susan Wilson-Solovic, who is the co-founder, CEO, and chairman of SBTV. So that's smallbusinesstv.com. The first and only video news and information destination site for America's small businesses. She is also a respected speaker, columnist, and journalist, specializing in the challenges of women business owners. She began her professional career as a television news anchor and reporter. Subsequently, she joined a Fortune 100 company where she was named Vice President, Director of Corporate Marketing of the firm's International Asset-Based Lending Division. Please welcome my guest, Susan Wilson-Solovic.
Hi, Jackie. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
Well, I'm great, thank you. Much better to be talking to you.
Well, I appreciate that. How's the weather where you are?
Well, it's cold. We had a little dusting of snow last night, but,
wow,
you know, it's that time of year, so I don't mind it at all.
Right, and it's sunny out here, but it's a little chilly out here in the Vegas, so. Well, Susan, I really appreciate you spending some time with me. I actually came to you because I surfed around and surfed on to SBTV.com, and I thought it was fabulous. And I said, I have to talk to you. And at that point, too, I realized that you wrote the book, A Girl's Guide to Building a $1 Million Business. Now, I'm just giving our listeners an overview of who you are, but take me back and, you know, tell me who you are.
Well, Jackie, let's see. How far back do you want me to start?
Well,
we don't have that much time.
Yeah, really. I want to get some background on you. You know, how did you become who you are today?
Well, actually, Jackie, I started out, I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. Okay. My mother was an entrepreneur in the late 1940s. And she sort of taught me all about, you know, how important running a business is, and she got me excited about that. I actually started my first business when I was about 15 years old, believe it or not. And I subsequently, of course, went to college, and
I'm curious, what was that first business that you started?
You're going to get a kick out of this one. I was working as a waitress I grew up in a town of 3,000 people at a very small little restaurant there in my hometown, and I wasn't obviously even old enough to drive, so my dad had to drive me back and forth. And one evening I came home, and I'd been working, and we'd been really busy that night, and I took off my shoes, and I had blisters on my feet, and mm-hmm. I took my few wadded up dollar bills out of my pocket, and I put it down, and I looked at my mom, and I said, I have never worked so hard in my whole life. And I said, there's got to be an easier way to make money. And I actually was a majorette with the band, and I started teaching twirling lessons. On Saturday mornings, I had 75 little girls that would show up, and they each paid me $1 each for twirling lessons. And I said, now this is the way to do it.
So was that $1 per session?
$1 per session per little girl.
Oh, $75 a week? You were rolling in the dough.
I know. Tell me about it. So I suddenly realized that, you know, being able to be an entrepreneur, being innovative, being creative, looking at ways that you can share something with someone, like, you know, certainly teaching these little girls how to twirl a baton. I mean, some of them still come to me today when I'm home visiting family, and they'll say, remember, you taught me how to do a time toss, you know. So it's really cute. But I, of course, went away to college, and I graduated with a double major in history and political science. And was actually going to do a master's degree in political science when I was sidetracked and had the opportunity to get into television news broadcasting. And I got a job as an anchor and reporter in a local market. I stayed there for about a year. Then I moved on to a little bit larger market as an anchor and reporter. Eventually wound up doing corporate television in corporate America. I left that job. I was with Southwestern Bell. I left that job and started my first business after those high school days, started my first business, which was a small advertising and public relations firm. And during that little stint, I had a client, a very large client, that I allowed to take up most of my business. About 80-85% of my business was tied up with this one client, and the client went bankrupt.
Oh.
So basically, I had to close the door. I went back to corporate America, got a job as a manager of public relations for a division of ITT Corporation,
mm-hmm.
worked my way up to executive vice president, director of corporate marketing. I also went to Knight Law School and got a law degree.
Wow.
And when my division of this ITT was sold to Deutsche Bank, I left the company. I practiced law for a short period of time, and then I was launching my own business again, which was then Susan Says. And I started writing books, doing motivational speaking and some consulting. And then the opportunity came about to start SBTV.com. And it just seemed like all the pieces fit. Everything that I had done through my career seemed to just gel and come together. And I said, this is something I absolutely have to do. So I have two business partners, and we launched the business in January of 2004.
Fabulous. So it's online. Is it
yes.
also in your local area, too, or it's just totally online?
No, it's totally online. It's video news and information on the Internet for small businesses. Mm-hmm. And, Jackie, we're very excited because we just launched the new community area of SBTV. And while it's a work in progress, we've got lots of improvements to make, you know, we're starting to be able to have that interaction with our audience, and they're able to join discussion groups, ask questions, showcase their own businesses, and eventually, in the first quarter of next year, they'll actually be able to upload their own video, audio, or text contributions to SBTV as well.
How wonderful.
We're excited.
I'm excited for you. So now, every time I go on, you know, there's new news clips. So how often do you update the information?
Daily, sometimes even hourly. We certainly do daily news headlines, and we have content that's constantly being produced, either, you know, majority of it is in video content, but we also have great how-to text articles. In fact, we really have one of the largest libraries on the Internet of how-to information and materials for businesses who are trying to, you know, work and they're busy. And a lot of our audience members say, I tune into SBTV.com, I watch the daily news, and then I look for something that's going to help me improve my business that day. And while I'm listening and watching other programming, I can be doing other things. So they sort of have SBTV.com playing in the background.
Hmm. So how do your experts come into play on your show?
Well, we have a host of small business experts, and actually these are resources that we believe to be real thought leaders in their particular areas. So, for example, we have Michael Gerber, who is probably, and he's been called the number one entrepreneurial guru in the country, if not the world, who shares his great advice. And then we also have Chet Holmes, who is a dynamo when it comes to sales strategy. And they're all offering great information that perhaps you would find somewhere else in a written format in one of their books. But on SBTV, it's visual, it's video, and you have the opportunity to email in questions and to really participate in the content that you're seeing.
Okay. So your experts are selected based on their expertise in the business community?
Yes, absolutely. We have lots of people who contact us, and we look for people who really have, we believe, really have something important to contribute to our audience. Now, the great thing about the community, though, is as our audience is able to begin to upload their own contributions, our audience also will be able to rate that content contribution, and we believe that there will be experts that will percolate to the top of that community identified by our audience, and they'll be joining our expert panels as well.
Fantastic. Now, do your experts do a daily show also, or is theirs different?
No, they don't do a daily show, although they do regularly update their content, refresh and renew. The only daily programming is the daily news broadcast, which we do 6 days a week. The weekend is actually what we call our week in review type of programming. So it kind of hits some of the highlights and things from throughout the week.
Oh. So do you have a full-blown studio that you broadcast from?
We certainly do. We are headquartered actually in St. Louis, Missouri. We have a studio right here. We have about 16 employees on staff so far. And we are getting ready to open a small studio in New York. We actually had one for a while last year there, and we because of some situations with another company we were sharing some office space with, we had to close that studio down. And actually next week I'm going to be in New York looking at some space alternatives, so we're looking forward to opening that again.
Wow, so that'll be a separate studio that will also broadcast?
Yes, that's correct. And then you'll also see us, Jackie, at many of the Small Business Association, the national events around the country. So, for example, if you happen to attend a NABO of National Conference, mm-hmm. the National Association of Women Business Owners, mm-hmm. you'll see us there not only covering what's happening there, but also spotlighting and interviewing many of the NABO members and attendees who are there as well.
Oh, okay. And New York is home for me, so maybe when I move back next year, we'll be partnering to do some fun things. That'll be wonderful.
Oh, Jackie, that would be wonderful, yes.
Now, you're not going to get away from Susan Says.
Mm-mm. All right, okay.
What was your first book, and how did you start writing?
I started writing because actually the woman who I bought the rights to the SBTV name from, she was a mentor of mine, and she'd written a number of books on small business, and I had said I always wanted to write a book. How many people do you know who have said that, you know?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And she finally looked at me and she said, would you stop talking about it and do it? So I followed her advice and I said, you know what, I am going to do this. And I realized, having been at the time the only female executive for a Fortune 100 company in my particular division, having practiced law and having represented many women who were going through abuse or child custody mm-hmm. cases or divorce cases, and also having worked as a consultant with companies who wanted to market to women business owners and also to attract and retain women within their own organizations, I thought that I really had a message to share from some of the things that I had seen and I had learned. So I wrote my first book, which was called The Girl's Guide to Power and Success. And yet when I was working on that book, I thought, you know, I feel as though my life's journey has taken me through a number of unique experiences, and I have learned a lot. I've gone through the lesson of hard knocks probably four or five times at least. So I felt like I had a lot to say, but I also wanted to talk to other women. So I interviewed probably close to 100 or more women from all different walks of life, from all different backgrounds, all different age groups, and because I wanted their voices to be heard as well. So that was sort of the genesis for the first book. And then my second book was called Reinvent Your Career. And that book I wrote, interestingly enough, because of my observation of watching so many of my friends in their 40s or their 50s whose companies were being merged or acquired or downsized or upsized or whatever, and they were, you know, being transitioned out of their companies, and the identity crisis that they went through with that career transition. And as I watched, I thought, these people are so talented and so bright, but they were so tied to that job title in that particular company. So I wanted to talk about this whole great opportunity of, and the, you know, the sense of reinventing yourself and the energizing experience that can be. And then that's when someone said to me, well, Susan, you're the perfect one to write that book. Look how many times you've reinvented yourself. And I thought, well, that's probably true. So that was actually the thought behind the second book.
Okay. And then?
The third book, which you mentioned, The Girl's Guide to Building a Million-Dollar Business, was really for two reasons. One is just to give women the courage and the confidence and the role models to see that you can really build a million or more multi-million-dollar enterprise, and you don't have to be Oprah Winfrey or Martha Stewart or Rachel Ray. Because the media just doesn't cover that. But the second thing is, so many women are, we're starting businesses at twice the rate of men, but yet fewer than 3% ever cross over that million-dollar threshold. So
why is that?
It's that, I believe, personally, I believe it's that fear of thinking big, because of still a sense of this this feeling that women who are too ambitious or too aggressive or want to make money, that those are all bad things, that those are all unfeminine. Mm-hmm. But also, as I mentioned before, just this lack of a role model, of seeing that, you know what, that million-dollar woman business owner could be my next-door neighbor. And, you know, I say in the book, if you want to know what a million-dollar woman business owner looks like, look in the mirror, because there she is. She could be you easily. So just giving women the inspiration to believe that they absolutely can do it and not to be afraid of it.
And I think sometimes they're just, like you said, they're afraid, because I think they get ahead of themselves with the whole structuring of the business and what
right.
it'll take, and, oh, I don't want employees, and they
right.
just throw all the negatives out there before they even get going.
Right,
and then
right.
you find other women who kind of fall into the million thing because they were doing what they enjoyed doing, whether it was like a Martha Stewart, they were cooking, and next thing they knew they had, you know, had a special recipe for a salad dressing or whatever it may have
right.
been. And, it
right.
got placed, and, you know, it just went from there. So I think
right.
people just overthink things.
Well, that's true. And, you know, a lot of people said to me, well, why would I want to build a million-dollar business? I'm already stressed out and working so hard now. And I said, you know, the great thing about building a larger organization is, and getting over that million-dollar mark, is you can hire more resources, the right kind of talent, the outside assistance that you need. And it doesn't get harder. It just gets actually, you know, a little easier. Not that you're not going to still have those nights that you wake up in the middle of the night and, you know, your stomach is churning and all of that. But, you know, you're not working 24/7 anymore, because you have those resources, people that you can depend on, a great team around you, and you're building something together.
And you're right, because I've spoken to a lot of people, and that is one of the key factors in developing a good business. Finances was up there. You know, you have to keep an eye on that and understand how that works. And then they said a good team, you know, get people who know what they're doing, so that
uh-huh.
you're not trying to do what you don't know how to do. You know, let the person, like I always say, I
right.
let the people who know what they do do that, and I do what I do, and everybody's
right.
happy.
And Jackie, you know, I was actually on a phone conversation with a couple of ladies who have started a company, and they asked me if I would be willing to mentor them a little bit. And one of the things I asked them is, have you sat down and looked at your own skill sets? And then try to look at, objectively as you can, the skill sets and the competencies it's going to take to grow the business to the level you want it to get to, and then figure it out where you're lacking and how you're going to find those resources. And they said, oh, no, we haven't done that. And I said, you really need to think about that, because nobody can really grow a substantial organization all on their own.
True. And that's important. So what other suggestions would you give to someone that's looking to step out into the entrepreneurial area or whatever it is to building a business? Because that was great.
Well, thank you. Yes, it really is. It's a situation where you look at women starting business, really not just women. I'm not going to just say women. Women and men, they get this idea that they want to start a business, and they start it because, as you said, Jackie, you know, people have this, they really like cooking, or they really like a certain aspect of something that they do, and they're good at it. So they go out and say, I'm going to go into my own business. But what they've really done is they've created a job for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When it is just you by yourself, and everything depends on you, 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 you haven't created a business, you've created a job. When you're creating a business, the business becomes larger than you are by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the business can sustain itself and go on even if you're not there. That is the difference between, you know, having a business and creating a job.
That's true. And I, you know what, and you're right, people don't think about that because they're so busy trying to do better than the boss.
Right, right, exactly,
you know,
right, right.
Things. I can do it better than the boss. Oh, it's so easy until they jump, you know, walk a day in the boss's shoes. And
right.
It's not.
Oh,
so
you have that right. Yeah, absolutely. The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence.
Until you get over there.
Right.
Wow. So how would somebody go about starting a business? Do you suggest they first go and do all the paperwork, the processing of getting licensed? Well, certain businesses you'd
sure.
be required to do that, so I guess
right.
you can't even really blanket that. But what, you know, do you have, like, your blueprint for business building, or I don't even know if there's anything just like that, but
you know, there are some people I've met with who swear up and down that they have this blueprint for helping businesses get started and succeed. Mm-hmm. My belief, Jackie, right or wrong, my belief is there are no two businesses are ever created equally. There are always going to be specific nuances, et cetera. So, but my first suggestion is, and this is going to reign true regardless of what industry you're in, what area of the country you live in, how much money you have, you don't have, whatever, it's going to reign true throughout. And that is you need to be able to figure out whether or not what type of business you're going to go into, you know, whatever product it is or service that you're going to sell, that you're going to be able to, number one, have a market for that, that you're going to be able to differentiate yourself enough in that market to be seen, and that the third and most important thing is that you're going to be able to sell that product or service at a price level that the market can sustain, but also that is worth your while to do that particular thing. So let me give you an example. I have a girlfriend who happens to be the most brilliant needle pointer I think I've ever seen. Her work is absolutely gorgeous. And I have said to her, you know, wow, you should really, you know, market this and do this for other people. But, you know, it really doesn't make any sense because it's so labor intensive of what she does. And by the time she finishes a project and she gets it, you know, finished off and whatever they do, I'm not into arts and crafts, but when she gets it all finished and done, it may take her anywhere from 4 months to 9 months, sometimes even a year, to finish that project. So what she would have to charge for that gorgeous needlepoint pillow that I'm going to put in my chair would be so cost prohibitive to make it worth her while to do all that work and time that there's no market for it.
Right.
So, you know, you really have to think about that. And then I always laugh and say to people, you know, does the world really need a better mousetrap? I mean, you know, sure, you might figure out a better way and a gizmo and da-da-da-da-da and all these bells and whistles, but do people really want it, and are they willing to pay for it?
Exactly. Yeah, because like you said, you know, have a market, because so many times people create things that fits their needs. Oh, I love it, and everybody's going to love this, and they run out and make a thousand, they're stuck with them in their garage because no one loved it but you.
Boy, isn't that the truth? You know, I will give you, I hadn't thought about this in ages, but now that you said this, I have to tell you this story.
Okay.
A number of years ago, I want to say it was probably in the late 80s, a friend of mine and I came out, he'd driven across country, and he was frustrated because he was always trying to find some kind of sports team on his radio or whatever so he could listen to it. And he said, boy, wouldn't it have been great, even though you had the seek and search on, wouldn't it have been great to have some kind of a listing of all the radio stations in the various states that carry CBS News or, you know, this sports outlet, you know, for the NFL or whatever. And so we did all kinds of research, and we put together this little book called On the Road with Radio. And we had stations, we had, you know, the where you could follow this, different types of music genres that you might be looking for. And we thought, oh, this will be great. Car dealers will want to buy these and put their logos on them and all sorts of things. It totally bombed.
Wow.
Talk about having boxes of On the Road with Radio in my garage for a long time. And it was because we thought it was a great idea. Mm-hmm. But nobody else got it. So
you didn't do the market research, huh?
We did not. So,
and then, you know, the other thing that people do, like you were mentioning about proper pricing, they don't proper price because they don't understand how to price it in the market with the, you know, supply and demand. So
right. I tell a funny start, little joke in the book, Jackie. It's about the woman business owner who goes to her CPA's office, and she says, you know, here are my financials and all this, and he's looking at them, going through them, and he says to her, you know, you really have a problem here. Did you realize for every one of your widgets you're selling, you're losing money?
Wow.
And she says to him, don't worry about it. I'm going to make it up on volume.
Yeah, you'll be bankrupt. Oh,
right, exactly. But, you know, it's we joke about that, but unfortunately there are some people who just think, yeah, but if I sell enough of them, I'll be okay.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, sure you will.
Right, exactly.
You better go back to work.
Right, and I've got this bridge in Brooklyn I want to sell you, too.
Now you mentioned your accountant. When you're beginning, should you have a team of those professionals that are on board with you?
My advice is absolutely you should. There are so many things that can trip you up early on that can cost you thousands down the road. That's particularly true with legal advice. Now today with, you know, a lot of the accounting software programs, it's not quite as critical to have that accountant on staff all the time, although you certainly do need to have regular updates and advice with an accounting professional. But in the legal arena, there are so many resources online now where you can incorporate yourself or, you know, set up all sorts of different documents and things, even, you know, trademarks, all of that. I have seen so many examples of people who thought they had done it correctly, failed to get that legal advice, and then it cost them so much in the end that because they'd done it wrong or they hadn't protected themselves, that it put them out of business.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so, you know, it's really, you can be penny-wise and dollar-foolish, and that's a great example of it. It's not that you have to have an attorney on retainer, but you certainly, even if you do the documents yourself, it is worth an investment, even if it's an hour of an attorney's time, just to review them for you so that you don't end up costing yourself your business down the road.
Now, I interviewed Ryan Alice, who's the president of iContact this week, and we were talking about business startups, and he mentioned that when you get to $5,000 a month, this was his rule of thumb,
okay,
that at this point you should start putting some things in place. You know, do you agree with that or not even agree? I mean, how do you feel about, you know, if people are going in and starting up a business, at what point should they now go into getting a professional? Because, you know, suppose they started their books on QuickBooks on their own. You know what I mean?
Sure.
At what point of volume, or is there a rule of thumb at this point now you should get a accountant? I guess it's when you're too busy to do your QuickBooks anymore.
You know, I think it really depends on your level of sophistication.
Mm-hmm.
So for myself, that's not my area of expertise. And so I would certainly, even using an accounting software package, I would still say I would review things at least on a quarterly basis with a professional. And the reason I would do that is because there are so many things like sales tax issues or, you know, quarterly estimated taxes and things like that that you need to be doing that you may not have the skills or even the awareness to know to do that. So it's a really good idea. Is there a rule of thumb on when you need to do that? You know, I think it depends on your own financial situation, the type of industry you're in. Personally, I would say you start from the get-go so that you make sure that you're doing everything correctly. Once again, the worst thing in the world you want to do is run into a situation where you fail to pay appropriate taxes, that you end up, you know, getting charged penalties or fees on things like that, or you've made serious errors that have caused you to make the judgments in your business that aren't correct.
Now, with building that team, do you suggest having a board of directors or an advisory board or both?
I would suggest from at the beginning having an advisory board. I don't think you need to go so far as a board of directors because that's a very formal and much more time-consuming mechanism. Mm-hmm. But I think an advisory board, once again, particularly if you're doing this by yourself and you cannot have, as we said, you can't have all of the skill sets that you need to build the company. But if you build an advisory board and you bring in people who do have some experiences and some expertise in areas where you're lacking, wow, this is like free advice, you know?
Right.
And what a great way to augment. Plus, the people that on your advisory board are also, they're interested and they're invested in helping you succeed.
Susan, I am not going to keep you because I told you I would just keep you for a short period of time, and I very much appreciate you spending that time with me today.
Well, Jackie, it was my pleasure, and please call me anytime.
I will. Oh, don't tell me that. She's on my advisory board, you guys. You heard that.
Oh, there you go.
Susan, thanks so much. You have a great weekend.
Well, you too, Jackie. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Jackie Jones Challenge. To find out how you can host your own podcast, visit us at smallbizamerica.com.
Small Biz America.